Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
I got this idea when you go to the hospital to the emergency room.
Michelle Singletary on Focus on the Family Minute.
And I've been there, you know, some kid breaks an arm or something, and you see someone come in and they go ahead of you. And you're thinking, well, wait a minute, I've been sitting here for hours. And so what they're doing is they're triaging who is the most important, life-threatening. And so that's what you have to do with your life. So you have to, what needs to be taken care of right away, emergency fund, life happens fund, that's something I talk about in a book. And then your savings for different things like retirement, well, you know, I'm sorry, your daily expenses, and then the long-term things like retirement and things like that. So you have to, because you only have a certain amount of money coming in, and that's what you need to do. What is the most important thing that you have to take care of?
You can hear more from Michelle today at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
Now, The Rest of the Story. In the history books, Titus Flavius Vespasianus is almost always called Vespasian, the son of a tax collector, recognized as founder of the Flavian dynasty in Rome. He was emperor for a mere 10 years, from 69 to 79 AD, and yet his impact on his nation-state was enormous. For Vespasian is also remembered in Roman history as the fiscal innovator. And hear this, contemporary Americans, he was the fiscal innovator who wiped out an enormous national debt. How he did it is the rest of the story. Vespasianomics. Inspired by the serious deficit situation which Vespasian inherited from Nero, meant sacrificing a good guy image for the sake of solvency. So how did Vespasian restore economic equilibrium to Rome? Well, first he took a long, hard look at the books. What he had learned at the knee of his tax collector father had not been lost on him. He could not only count, he knew the meaning of money, so one can imagine Vespasian's horror when he discovered the enormity of Rome's national debt. It was a figure, according to the emperor's calculations, somewhere in the area of 40 billion sesterces. Scholars are often incredulous at that amount, but remember, it was probably reckoned in a much depreciated currency. Anyway, Vespasian grimly informed his government that it would take a 40 billion with a B sesterces to pull Rome out of the red. He knew that no single source of revenue would do. He would sell imperial property in Egypt, which he did. He would put important government jobs on the block for hefty prices, which he did. Basically, the tax collector's son realized that the key to restoring the Roman treasury was taxation, and thus was born one of the most dramatic, one of the most famous tax programs in all of the ancient world. Vespasian increased extant taxes, even doubled some. He taxed Roman provinces, formerly immune to taxation. Now, history doesn't record whether he succeeded in raising the entire 40 billion that he had projected as necessary, but I'll tell you this, he wiped out the debt. He wiped out the total debt with sesterces to spare. For Vespasian is credited subsequently with a lavish building program, including restoration of the Capitol. He began work on the Colosseum, and it was he who established the first public educational system in classical antiquity by ordering that qualified teachers be paid salaries and awarded pensions out of public funds. And all of this he accomplished in a period of 10 years. And yet, while you may never have known of his accomplishments, as of this day, you will never forget one of his accomplishments. For after Vespasian had sold all of that imperial property, And after he'd sold all of those government offices and raised as much money as he could get from those sources, after he doubled conventional taxes, after he had taxed Rome's formerly untaxable provinces, the emperor discovered he still did not have quite enough revenue to reach his goal of solvency, so he created a tax that is with us still. He invented a means of transforming urgent necessity into cold cash. He balanced the budget by taxing the public lavatories, which were omnipresent in ancient Rome. And thus the pay toilet was born. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. We are taking your calls and texts. I'm working on getting the text so I can see them. 805-238-5775. I do have one text message. Gaya Powell is running for clerk recorder, and she's also currently charged with multiple election fraud issues, misdemeanors, and felonies. We're talking about both issues. Gaya said something like, we could not claim ignorance to the rule, but she is running for office where she cannot be ignorant, who has to know the law and apply it correctly. Other than her ignorance and subsequent self-education by fire, how is she qualified?
So I am qualified because of my business background. That's very well proven. Regarding that statement, so again, there's 27,000 election codes. I was running for mayor of Arroyo Grande because I was concerned about the pornography I found at the high school, the Title IX violations, the DEI policies that were being implemented, what I felt was conflicts of interest financially with the city of Arroyo Grande, et cetera. So that's why I ran in the first place. And so when I reached out to the Fair Political Practice Commission, on their website, it says, if you're thinking about running for, go look it up. If you're thinking about running for office, check with your local election authority first. That is Jessica Mattson at the Arroyo Grande City. She's the clerk. She is the election expert. She's not a lawyer. I did not take her advice legally or anything about my campaign. She helped navigate the rules and the municipal codes and whatnot. So I was told that in order to run for office, I had to be over the age of 18, registered to vote within the city limits, not reside, registered to vote within the city limits, and otherwise qualified. So, you know, I filled out the petitions and got signatures and whatnot. So I, like everyone else, probably thought that meant that I needed to reside in the city. So I took the extra step, and though my home that is literally like I could walk to the city limits is in Arroyo Grande, I rent a home in the unincorporated area, and I was told that if I was there, then I could not run. So I I've told everyone this. It was not deceptive. I didn't keep it a secret. I said I took this extra step because this is so important to me. I feel morally obligated to run for mayor because I'm so disturbed at how our society is devolving, especially in the election, in the local government. And so it's a part-time job. It pays less than $800 a month. So I'm not going to commit. This is ridiculous. Anyway, so I went ahead and got a residence within the city limits thinking I had to reside there a certain amount of time. So I did. So I rented the room. It was a verbal agreement with someone that I've had many verbal agreements business-wise, and there's never been a problem. They trust me. This person trusts me with his business, his personal information. So there's no, and there's no requirement that I have to have a written lease. And I even continued to rent the room after the election, because I planned on hopefully renting the whole condo at some point and then possibly buying it. So I had a tragedy happen with one of my pets, and then another one of my pets became blind and he had to have 16 drops in his eyes throughout the day, or, you know, things would not go well for him. And my husband, that's his new job. So I realized, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to reside in the city as much as I think I am. So I reached out to Jessica Mattson and I asked her, you know, how much time do I actually have to reside at my residence within the city? And she said to me, whatever you're comfortable with. And I'm like, huh? And so her statement that she said over and over and over, and it was, you know, obviously exhibit A for me, is, good morning, there are currently no, and to this day, this is still correct, there are currently no residency restrictions related to time spent at one residence within the city limits versus at another residence outside of the city limits. A candidate does need to be a registered voter within the city limits. And then if you even go online right now and look at the current registration form for California, it doesn't even say residence on it. It says home. And your home could actually be across street. So there's a lot. This is about a debate over a definition that's a code that no one even told me about. And I'll argue that, but it's not a criminal offense. So this is the last thing I'll say, because I don't want to suck up the whole time talking about this. And I'm happy to come back and talk all day long about it. I'm happy to. I've done a lot of a research on election law the last year, as you can imagine. So I trusted that this was correct. I still think Jessica Mattson has it right. It's absolutely correct. We live in America. I get to decide. If people want to think that's unethical, now that's a whole nother argument, and people can judge as they wish. When I was charged, I decided consciously that I wanted to be I wanted this matter to be heard under common law. So when you are your own lawyer, you get all the discovery. Like, I was buried in data, not a lawyer. And then the lawyer is tasked, if I continue to have one, with redacting everything before I get to see it. It's another ploy the DA's office does. So what I did is I got all the data. They had to redact it. Yeah, Dan Dow is 150 employees, and my poor public defender is just one guy with no clerk. Like, and same with like the person that represented Michelle Morrow. Like, there's no way that they can go through, you know, a mountain of data and redact it before they can even give it to their client. So if anyone's being deceptive and fraudulent, I would think it would be the DA's office. I've always been very open, and there's no one who can say I was being deceptive. I even said it at a mayor's forum that the League of Women Voters hosted. And in fact, this is probably what caused the big fire with Tom Foulkes, is that I said I rented a room within the city limits so I could run for office. Now, I'll tell you exactly what I stand for when I am going to win the election for county clerk recorder. I will follow state law. I'm a law-abiding citizen, but I will strongly voice my concern because I took an oath to the Constitutional Republic. I did not take an oath to serve not one constituent. And if you let the Constitution guide you, then you protect the citizens. So I stand for voter ID required. We do not have legitimate elections if we don't require ID. You have to prove that you're a United States citizen when you register to vote, period. We want to insist that the voter rolls are clean and accurate. We want meaning most Americans that have want common sense leadership, in-person voting. Absentee ballots cause corruption. Even Jimmy Carter warned that. So absentee ballots should only be for verified needs. We need same-day voting. We need same-day results. We need full transparency and not criticizing citizens that have affidavits upon 200 affidavits of citizens that have filed with the DA's office that nothing was done with, complaining or voicing their very, very very important concerns about election integrity and what they had witnessed, etc. Those are just collecting dust, by the way. And so we need more North County clerk office accessibility. And I will be doing civics classes. I think that going into our schools, our school system has devolved so badly that we don't even have civics classes for children. And if you have to start really early and have, you know, that we can debate about all that, but civics classes, as soon as you destroy civics classes and there aren't any, then the children do not understand and aren't taught that it is such a privilege to have the right to vote, to have a voice, and to be able, and then it's a moral obligation to vote, because if you don't vote and you don't get involved in politics, you are destined to be ruled by idiots. And that's what I feel has happened. I feel like the people that I've dealt with, the investigators, Dan Dow, Elena Kano, very low intelligence, which is very dangerous.
And let me get some words in here, okay? First of all, mayor is not a job. I don't know if you, I'm just going to explain that.
Yeah.
It is called public
service. I understand.
And
that.
It's not a job that pays. People do it because they care about their community. The $800.
That's why I was doing it.
Is considered a stipend.
Not for the money.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That is not considered a part-time job. It is considered public service, and that's why people do it.
But what I meant was no one could accuse me of like going for supervisor's positions, which is a couple $100,000. Like, it's like, I'm not going to blow up my whole life by committing fraud, ever.
And let me go over, I was at part of the trial. It wasn't a trial.
It's not a trial, it's a pre-line.
Let me get a couple words in. I was at the hearing in which you were, in which your preliminary hearing, and I want to go over some of the questions. Let me ask you a question, and then don't go on to a number of tangents, if you could, so we can get through this. First of all, what they are saying is that you do, to register to vote somewhere, you have to live there. You're saying you don't have to live there. You can register to vote somewhere. You do not reside. That is fine. You have an argument with the prosecutors, and I'm sure the judge will rule in the end on that. The other issues that were, you had a woman that you rent from, you and your husband have lived there some time in an ADU behind or near their home, and you've lived there for some time. She testified that you had that she had asked to talk to you because she had been on the Harbor District for 24 years, and she brought it up to you. You're living here, and you have to live in Arroyo Grande to run there, and that you had told her, I had an attorney say, the way I'm doing it is okay. She claims you said it was an office there. And then she says she was, matter of fact, out and ran into Tom Folks, and she told Tom, did the laws change? And Tom said, no, what are you talking about? And she explained what was going on with you. You did ask her later how often you talked to Tom Folks. And she had said it had been 30 years since she had talked to him last. Or had
and he's not an election law expert.
I'm not saying he's an election law expert. He is the chairman of the Democratic Central Committee. So that was, she claimed you said it was an office. First, respond, what do you say about the allegations that she made that you were renting an office and were staying at her property and not staying over there?
So the preliminary hearing is basically a very low bar for the prosecutor to just prove that there is probable cause to move forward. So it's very typical that it would go to trial. I kind of, you know, turned it into a little mini trial. And that's why I kept getting shut down, because you can only, it's very narrow on what you can actually discuss at that preliminary trial. So it went exactly as I thought. And and I look forward to the trial, because I can then basically give you my evidence. So the answer to Kieran's question is this: I have never had a conversation with my landlord from Heritage Lane ever about my campaign or any other subject we say hello. I even said during the preliminary, how often do we talk? It's rare, and it's usually hi and bye. So one of the reasons that my husband and I did not feel like we could move, and that's not our domicile, it's not our long-term residence. Half of our belongings are still in storage. Like, we never thought our life would turn out this way. The Moffitts have been through, and the reason I can say their name is because she was obviously in the press. They have been through hell, basically, the last 5 years. And my husband is a very caring, loving person, and he's worried about their animals and them. And so we didn't feel like, I mean, he just didn't feel like we could move, you know, and you know, there's, anyway, that's a whole nother side story. But the Carolyn Moffitt is lovely. We've never had a conversation about anything of substance. So the claims she was making are false. Now, what's great, and this can come out in trial, is that, I mean, great for me, is that when she was speaking to the investigator, that's a totally different story that she told him. And so I will let that come out in trial. But during the interview she was having with the investigator, she had three different scenarios about the condo. She didn't really know that much about it. She was confused. About midway through her interview with the investigator, she told him she didn't even know who he was for sure. So he had to re-explain to her who was calling. So anyway, love her. She's sweet, sweetest person. I think that she got wrapped up in the drama, and she's a huge advocate and for the Democratic Party. She's part of the League of Women Voters, and that's where I think all this began in the first place. Is when I told the I was at a mayor's forum that was hosted by the League of Women Voters. And I said I rented a room within the city limits so I could run for office.
We're going to take a break, a word for our sponsors, and be back with more with Gaia Powell.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks surged in the NASDAQ and S&P 500 notched their sixth straight session of gains as oil prices sank after President Trump paused Iran attacks for 2 weeks, agreeing to a ceasefire if the Strait of Hormuz reopens immediately. U.S. oil seeing its steepest decline in 6 years, with West Texas Intermediate crude diving below $95 a barrel. Most all of the 11 S&P 500 sectors were higher, with tech the best performer, while energy was the only laggard. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks were mostly higher, led by Meta and Alphabet. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, Sherwin-Williams, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow decliners, Chevron, Salesforce, and IBM. The Dow surging 1,325 points, the NASDAQ higher by 617, S&P 500 up 166. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Most investments today feel like second jobs. Real estate? You're a landlord. Stocks? You're a day trader. Crypto? You're a full-time researcher. You've got a life to live. Your investment should help you live it. That's why more Americans are choosing gold. Noble Gold has helped thousands protect their future with real physical gold. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to get your free wealth protection kit. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Junior, you know why my TV is turned down so low? Last week, I went down to see Peter Lussier at Hearing Aid Specialists of the Central Coast. He's a nice young feller who tested my hearing. He had me try on these nearly invisible hearing aids. See? They ain't got no buttons or nothing. By gum, I hear like I'm 29 years old. Call Peter at Hearing Aid Specialists. Dial 805-460-7385. Or use your smartphone and go to slowcountyhearingaids.com.
Hi, it's Brian Carroll from A1 Glass. Get rewarded when you upgrade to Milgard windows and doors and earn up to $100 back per patio door and up to $40 back per Milgard window. Enjoy better comfort, energy efficiency, a home that looks incredible, and huge savings. Don't wait, the spring sales event ends June 8th. Plus, A1 Glass is your local family-owned award-winning team, voted best on the Central Coast. A1 Glass, for all your glass needs.
Qualifying Milgard products only. Rewards issued as electronic gift cards. See A1 Glass for details.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775. 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vili, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. We do take calls, 238-5775. We also take text messages at the same phone number. We're having a little trouble seeing the text messages. I'm not sure if anybody's texted or not. We're seeing older ones, so I'm not sure if I've done something wrong here. But anyway, one of the other allegations against you, there were a couple others, was that there's a Form 700 in elections. So when you're running for office, it says you sign it under penalty of perjury, and it's to stop conflicts of interest. So what it is you have to write every bit of investments you have or all your money comes with. And the point of the matter, the reason that they put this 700 form in, this gives a chance like reporters. You know how many people have been busted because a neighbor, a reporter, a resident, somebody went and pulled somebody's 700 form and noted that they had a conflict and they were not talking about it. It has been used repeatedly. It's a type of transparency. Your 700 form, it came out let's talk about Marquis first. The other person that you rented.
Let's finish the 700 thing real quick because it'll be quick.
Okay, the 700 form, you put down zero, and it came out during the preliminary that you did have income. Why did you put down zero, and that was under penalty of perjury?
So when you go to fill out papers in the city, which is totally different than the county, like the county, you have the forms, you look over them, they want you to fill them out before you come. At the city, Jessica Manson's amazing, and she gives you everything beforehand too, but you actually sit in front of her as you fill everything out. And so the two times that I filled out that form, it's a very lengthy form. She told me, like, don't get overwhelmed with this. It's like, you know, it's pretty straightforward. And so this is the confusion that I had. This is something that I misunderstood. It was explained to me it was to report conflicts of interest. So I am the volunteer director of the Roy Grande Village Improvement Association. So I thought when I, like, you can fill out this area that has schedules attached to it. Or you have the option to just say none. And so I clicked the box twice, both times that I ran, that it was none because I was reporting that I don't have any conflicts of interest and I don't take an income from the AGVIA. So I just was saying that I don't have a conflict of interest. So that's why I misunderstood it. Now, when I filled it out for the county that I did just recently, I only had to fill out one section because I don't have any investments or it's my life.
But you had income. The doctor said he was paying you.
No. I absolutely had income. I misunderstood. I thought I was just reporting because it was all new to me. And it's still, you know what I mean? I'm not some action candidate expert. I thought it was asking me, do you have any reportable income that could be a conflict of interest? Like, is your husband an architect or do you have any financial relationship or do you work at like a builder's office? That's what I was thinking. So I thought, okay, because I'm a volunteer for this organization, this nonprofit, I just need to let them know I don't get any money for that. So I would, why in the hell would I click that I don't have any income whatsoever when it's obvious that I do? Like, I always have had income throughout my whole life. So I misunderstood. Now, when I went to fill out the form this last time, I just had to fill out one section, and it basically said, do you make an income between $10,000 and $100,000? And so that's what I clicked on. So it's not like you have to give them all of your, it's not like it's an IRS audit. Like, so anyway, so that's answering your question. And then you wanted to ask me about some of Dr. Marquis's comments at the preliminary. So the preliminary is not an opportunity where I can really cross-examine witnesses. And
let me ask the question. Okay. Dr. Marquis also testified, and he testified that you did not rent a residence. You rented an office, that you brought a box over and nothing else. He doesn't believe you ever stayed there. If you came in and stayed once, he didn't see it. He eventually moved the box into a garage, and you were, he said you were renting an office space, and it was never rented as a residence. How do you respond to that?
So Dr. Marquis never said that I rented the condo as for an office. He said, I rent an office space from him at Pathways to Health. So I believe, and you can talk to Dr. Marquis about this yourself. I believe he lied under oath, because I believe that the investigator, because don't forget, I have all the evidence. So I have all the recorded interviews, etc. And I was sad for him that he decided to lie under oath. So during his statements, he was interviewed by the DA's office twice. He said numerous times that he and I had a long-term rental agreement, and I continued to rent the room after I ran for mayor, because I wasn't planning on running for mayor again. My plan was to eventually rent the whole condo and hopefully buy it eventually. And why would he be against that? If I can pay market price or whatever, why would he care? So he said to the investigator twice, we had a long-term rental. And he also said that I lived there. He saw evidence that I lived there. Now, when he was under oath on the stand, I believe what happened is when the investigator reached out to him the second time, he had spoken to Dr. Marquis's realtor. And so the realtor contacted Dr. Marquis, and I think that Dr. Marquis was being misled to think he had done something wrong by like renting me the room to run for office. He didn't rent me the room to run for office. I was going to rent it, and I was just going to run for office. And even if I didn't tell him I was going to run for office after I rented a room, just like I didn't talk to the Moffitts about running for mayor, I don't have to. He didn't do anything wrong, and I didn't do anything wrong.
But you're saying that he wasn't truthful on the stand.
That's correct. And okay. I can easily prove it. But the sad part is that I think that, so when he was being interrogated by the investigator, the investigator was saying things that were, that I think that Dr. Marquis made him afraid. He was saying, you know, you bought the condo like right before the elections started the first time, and then you sold it, like you put it on the market the day after the election. That's suspicious. And he's like, well, because the reason that Dr. Marquis put it on the market the day after the election is he told me himself, he goes, I didn't even tell you that I put it on the market because I didn't want to stress you out, and he thought it would cause me a problem.
And let's get to, there's something going on with the text line. We're seeing him out of line. We've tried to get him. The one that's showing right now is 69 days old. I have gotten a couple to my phone. Why should voters have confidence in a candidate who appears not to understand what a Form 700 is or its purpose? That form exists to ensure transparency and accountability in public office and is meant for the public, not something a candidate gets to selectively interpret or decide what to disclose. Your comments have made it seem like sharing that information is a matter of personal choice rather than a legal and ethical obligation. At the same time, there have been noticeable gaps in your understanding of campaign finance rules, along with actions that raise questions about how election funds have been handled. Add to that confusion about election boundaries, and it begins to raise broader concerns about readiness for these roles. These are not small issues. They go directly to competency, transparency, and trust in the role of clerk recorder. Can you explain these concerns and why voters should feel confident in your ability to serve, especially when other candidates appear to be to demonstrate a stronger understanding of these core responsibilities?
Well, I appreciate that question. The 700 form, like I had mentioned, when you go in, there's massive amount of forms. I mean, even the voter guide itself, I mean, the candidate guide for just the city of Rio Grande is 68 pages long. So as I'm going through the forms, I am answering them to the best that I can as I was understanding it. And people can judge or criticize. It's absurd to think that I literally would think everyone would think I have no money at all. And, you know, obviously I've, you know, been very open that
and again, it's about the transparency. It's not about the money. Let's take a caller and I'll let you finish that. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask our guests today?
Well, it's more of I'm interested in why Dan Dow goes after such a small thing when there's so much corruption in our county.
I couldn't agree more.
I mean, yeah, there's been plenty listening of crime. To you guys. I love the show, by the way. I've been listening to KPRL for over 20 years, and I've heard about all this corruption, and this is what they come up with? Like, come on. I'm just disappointed. That's all.
And thank you very much for calling in. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask the guests today?
I have problems with Elaine Cano. In the trial against Darsha Stebbins, she tried to bill Darsha Stebbins for overtime for salaried employees. Now, isn't she supposed to know that salaried employees cannot get paid overtime?
She should know a lot of things. She doesn't seem to have a lot of current
sense. Well, that was just an example of how inept I consider Elaine Cano, and that's why she's going after you.
Well, it was interesting that she's so involved in all of the three the three cases that happened in 1 year. But I am suing Elaine Cano in federal court for election interference, and that case is progressing. So, you know, I will defend myself. I will, and I plan on filing a 1983 federal court case against Dan Dow and Nick Coughlin, too, for just trampling all over my constitutional rights.
Well, Dan Dow, I love him, but he's
a rhino.
He shoots from the hip and very often gets himself in trouble because of what he says.
I know he even discusses my case on Facebook.
Yeah, you can't. You shouldn't be doing that.
I agree.
That's crazy.
It's low intelligence.
He got taken off of that case
the BLM case.
That went with the Attorney General. I love Dan Dow, but he's got to learn to keep his mouth shut.
Or just focus on his job.
Thank you very much for calling in.
Bye.
Okay, I've got another text message. Government Code 1065 specifically addresses fraudulent domicile. A fraudulent violation is established when an office holder fails to maintain genuine this is from the text.
An office holder.
Let me finish. Fails to maintain genuine domicile within the jurisdiction. Does so with the intent to retain office while actually living elsewhere. Misleads voters into believing they live within the jurisdiction, and the penalty is up to 6 months in county jail and or a $1,000 fine, plus immediate forfeiture of the office and a 4-year ban from holding any state or local office. Feels like you were intentionally trying to deceive the public. How do you respond to that?
Obviously, I never tried to deceive the public. I went to many public meetings where I told people, you know, that I rented a room within the city limits so I could run for office. I even said it at a as I said, at a mayor's forum that was hosted by the League of Women Voters. So that law that you're referring to, or the code, is pertaining to someone who's been elected. So the investigator, they were so frustrated with me. And again, to have an investigation of you for 9 months, so I kept waiting for them to arrest me. It's like, are they going to do it at 7 o'clock in the morning at my office? Am I, you know, where are they going to try to humiliate me? I was never arrested. So the law you're talking about is for elected officials. And the investigator, the last time I voluntarily went to talk to them because they were so frustrated that I just wouldn't comply with their allegations.
We're going to take a break, a word from our sponsors, and be back with more with Gaia Powell.
Listen to this real Paso Robles Glass customer where they installed 23 replacement Milgard Tuscany windows and two sliding doors.
Steve Eklund, Craig Smith as an architect, and a proud and honored client of Paso Robles Glass. Hey, the boys are doing a great job. They just left. Everything is just fine. Extremely good crew. You got that crew is exceptional. They're all hardworking guys, very careful, very cautious. All is good. I think they have one more day tomorrow, wrap it up, the finished work. I'd like to set up a time to come up and see you next week. I've got a big, big project I'd like you to look at for me. Whatever works on your end, just wanted to let you know, Steve. Take care. Bye.
Get rid of your old broken windows and get new Milgard energy-efficient windows and doors with Milgard's ironclad lifetime warranty.
When it comes to selling your home in the North County, one agent can only do so much.
That's why we show up as a team.
I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Karen Peek.
And we're the Peek team.
And equal partners in every sale.
Pricing, marketing, negotiations.
We both do it all.
Two professionals reviewing every detail.
Two voices advocating for you at every step.
We tag team the work.
So nothing gets missed.
One mission.
Sell your home with minimized headaches.
We're the Peek team.
At Peek Realty.
And we work together for you.
Thinking about selling your home in North County? Reach the Peek team at Peek Realty. Just Google Peek Realty, that's P-E-E-K Realty. The Peek team at Peek Realty live wonderfully on the Central Coast.
DRE number 0219-9910.
Propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
This is Billy Gallant with your locally owned and operated H&R Block office. As local accountants retire, many taxpayers are left wondering where to turn. H&R Block is ready when you need a trusted expert. With experienced tax professionals, your local H&R Block delivers reliable help year after year, no matter how the tax laws change. You'll get knowledgeable service, clear pricing, and flexible options to file. So if your old tax preparer is stepping away, step confidently into tax season with H&R Block. Trusted expertise that's here to stay. Call your local H&R Block office today to make an appointment.
Welcome back to Sound Off. We have Gaia Powell on today, and she's talking about her run for County Clerk Recorder and some of the allegations against her in court right now. She's charged with election fraud. You were answering a question when we got a
Yes. So that code is when someone's been elected. So when I was being interrogated by the DA's office the last time, the investigator asked me specifically, so if you would have won the election, what would you have done? And I said, I would have called I would have called Jessica Mattson to get some guidance and just find out what the municipal codes are and then go from there. And that totally pissed him off because I just would not comply with their accusations against me.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask the guests today?
Yes, I would like some clarification as to what this condo is. Was it built and zoned as a residential condo, or was it built and zoned as a commercial condo? Reason I ask is my dentist either rents or owns an office condo, as does my tax preparer. They can't live there. It's not zoned for it, and it may not have the requirements for, you know, residential living, which, by the way, is in state law regarding egress windows and all sorts of things.
So I think what you're trying to ask me is the condominium is a residential area, and I've never never used it or rented it as an office. Where okay. I believe Karen was misunderstanding was that when Dr. Marcus was questioned, he rents me, or at the time, he rented me an office out of his practice. I also was his consulting operations director.
What he testified at the preliminary is that he rented you an office at that condo.
Nope.
And that was an office, and also...
That's not what he said. You can get the transcript.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was denying that he had rented me the room or that we had an agreement that I could, I guess, come and go, whatever his statement was. But that was not true. And like I said, I believe he felt intimidated as though he thinks he is going to get in trouble. He witnessed what happened to me. He knew about all the search warrants. He knew how much stress it was causing. I would talk to the staff about it and reassure them. It's like, if they do come and arrest me, I have not done anything wrong. Dr. Marquis rents me a room. I did not do anything wrong to my understanding. They have not been able to show me a residency law that I broke. But the answer to your question is the condo is a residential condo. I never used it as an office. I didn't rent it as an office. That was never. And Dr. Marquis told the investigator twice. He just didn't realize he was being recorded. And I don't know why he panicked and lied. But I think this DA's office is very manipulative. I think they're intimidating. I don't think they're looking for actual justice. I think they're looking for easy wins. So scare the shit out of people that are, you know, law-abiding citizens, make them panic, make like Michelle Morrow pleading no contest, even though she has clearly said she's not a fraud. But the stress that this type of thing has caused, and I just want to say one thing before the show ends, the most important, most significant decision a DA can make is to decide to charge anyone, because regardless of the outcome, that person's life is changed forever. So people should know that. So my life has been destroyed. Michelle Morrow's life, the Lisa Marone, even though her case was thrown out, David Plattek, Sarah Ernie, who was a doctor, and he claimed that she wasn't, and she is. She never said she was an MD. So we need to have an investigation of the investigators, because they are victimizing just innocent people that are trying to do their best. So the only crime that we've ever done is that we cared enough about our community to run for office. It's a huge sacrifice. And I did nothing wrong. I followed the guidance of the experts. I'm no election law expert. And even with a year being able to research election law, there's 37,000 of them. You tell me anyone who knows them all.
Thank you for calling in. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask the guests today?
Hey, my question is kind of two parts. So when it comes to the house or the rented apartment, is that the address you put on your paperwork?
Yes.
When you filed?
That's
and
correct.
Is that the address you lived at when you filed?
Yes. I lived at both places. So I had dual residency. So, and then, and just so everybody knows, I never hid it from anyone. When the investigators, it was 24 hours within their investigation started, and they were already at my property at Heritage Lane outside of the city limits and seized my phones. And I said, you know, I was told that they asked me, like, you know, there's a question about your residence, the condo versus this place. I said, I have not been to the condominium in a year. And I was told that that was okay because I have some issues here at this property. So here's a good example. If I have a property in Colorado and I have a property in California, I get to choose which domicile, residence, whatever you want to call it, that I vote, that I register to vote from. And there's a lot of word salad going on, but the law is the law. And there is no law about dictating where, you know, that there's a you're able to charge someone with a residency crime. It's just a definition. It's not a criminal offense. So I never lied. We had some things happen. And again, the Heritage Lane place is not our domicile. It's not our permanent place that we intend to stay at. We have been kind of stuck there. Half of my belongings are in storage and have been for 5 years. Life happens as you make plans. And that's exactly what happened. And I understood the law, and I understand it now even more. And I know I did not violate any residency law, and I'm certainly not a fraud. Thanks for your question, though.
I was just wondering where you were actually living, because that's what it basically comes down to, is whether you perjured yourself or not. You know what I mean? So that was
I never perjured myself.
That's a question.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't.
Thank you for calling in. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask the guests today?
Yeah, I've been listening to the show, and I had a question because I heard a prior caller saying, you know, this looks like, you know, resources could be used better by the DA and pursuing people. And I was wondering what type of involvement maybe Ms. Powell could tell us that John Enswalabear has had in this situation, and if he's provided any guidance, and if anybody's been looking into maybe possible conflicts that Mr. Enswalabear has from his private practice previously with his duties and projects that he's involved with at the county.
You know, I don't have an answer for you regarding that. Unfortunately, I'm not even familiar with that particular person. But this is out of Dan Dow's jurisdiction. It's like it should have gone to the state. So it's out of our area. So it's objective when we don't have a bunch of local elected officials that all know each other, and the investigators and the attorneys, you know, even the prosecutor is the same prosecutor. So think about that. Right. It's like all of these.
I was asking because there was an article today that mentioned that John Enswalabear, he's the county attorney and formerly the city of San Luis attorney. And the article in Cal Coast News was mentioning that he was discussing things about election and the city clerk's office. And I just didn't know his interface with Dan Dow involving this stuff. And he has a long-standing relationship with the local bar and on the board, I believe, and also represent many developers and other players in San Luis County.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of conflicts of interest in our government here.
Thank you very much for calling in. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask the guests today?
Hi, how are you folks?
Good.
Ma'am, it sounds to me like your entire defense is that you're pretty much being politically targeted.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And I will agree with this. I have been to countless court hearings, and I have heard people, whether it be especially with the Department of Social Service workers, but police, DAs, I've heard a lot of people perjure themselves in court when they get, especially with police, when they get caught perjuring themselves, literally nothing has been done, and that disturbs me. I've wanted for quite some time for Dan Dow to go after folks for perjury.
I could not agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more.
Why do you suppose he's targeting you? Do you have any idea why he's targeting you?
He's
a Republican.
Is he?
I was curious.
Yeah, I would argue that. I think he's a rhino. But
thank you very much for calling in. We're at the end of the show. And thank you for listening today.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.